You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. The General Assembly has overwhelmingly approved steep cuts to Medicaid, Illinois' system of health care for the poor. Backers of the cuts say they're a long overdue correction for a program that's grown out of control. But others, including many African American lawmakers, say the state shouldn't balance its budget on the backs of its most vulnerable citizens. Illinois Public Radio's Brian Mackey reports.
The day began with reports that talks on reductions to Medicaid had come to an impasse. Senate Republicans were said to have concerns with the proposal, and members of the Black Caucus were going to fight the cuts. But by late afternoon, legislation sailed through the House and Senate in just a few hours. It had broad support from both Republicans and Democrats. Senator Heather Staines, a Democrat from Chicago, sponsored the proposal.
It's really in total about shared sacrifice and making a lot of tough decisions here for the overall good of the state.
Taken together, those decisions slash about $1.5 billion in health care spending for the poor. A small portion of that comes from reducing the amount of money the state pays to hospitals, nursing homes, and other providers. But most of the savings comes from taking away services and shrinking the number of people eligible for help. For example, it limits the number of eyeglasses people can get, ends prescription drug assistance for seniors, and no longer pays for visits to the chiropractor or podiatrist. It also requires the state to take a hard look at people on the Medicaid rolls to make sure they truly qualify. Plenty of groups oppose the cuts. At a hearing before a House committee, a parade of activists tried to convince legislators that cuts to their clients' programs would be disastrous.
One dentist can see 3,000 patients in a year at a clinic. This will eliminate that safety net.
The alternative for the children in this program is permanent hospitalization.
We are struggling, and I hesitate to guess that there will be a number of facilities closing.
My client is concerned that this will possibly increase the number of elderly divorces.
Particularly egregious to us is zeroing out the Illinois CARES RX program, the prescription program, away from seniors.
That last voice was William McNary with Citizen Action Illinois, a self-described progressive advocacy group. The consensus in the Capitol seems to be that cutting Medicaid is good politics, but McNary hit on one of the biggest policy questions. What will be the unintended consequences?
People will not get less sick because we make these cuts. As a matter of fact, in many cases, it's going to drive up health care costs over time because some of the people who would seek preventive care will now seek after-the-fact care.
Case in point, adult dental care is being cut, except for emergency cases that require pulling teeth. But dentists say tooth extraction is a job for oral surgeons, and most of them don't take Medicaid patients. So people will wait until toothaches become infections that leach into the brain and require long, expensive hospital visits. And every advocacy group has stories like that. It was enough to make many African-American lawmakers argue forcefully against the cuts. Donnie Trotter is a Democrat from Chicago and one of the longest-serving state senators.
I have never seen the callousness that is existing with individuals who want to take such a drastic cut against those who basically are the most vulnerable.
Senator James Meeks, another Chicago Democrat and the pastor of a Baptist church, framed the cuts as a social justice issue. He called the proposal a moral disgrace.
Are there people who really need these services that once we push that green light, are we pushing people into the grave?
The point has been made that this is immoral. This is not immoral.
Matt Murphy is a Republican senator from Palatine. He acknowledged that people would be hurt by the cuts.
But what would be immoral, in my mind, would be to sit back, pretend there's no problem, let this thing roll on, build up more of a backlog of bills to the point where the entire Medicaid system collapsed.
The legislation now goes to Governor Pat Quinn, who has pushed for Medicaid cuts for months. But it's just one piece of a broader package that intends to transform the Medicaid system. Another complex component also headed to the governor's desk would allow Cook County to grab more federal money by actually signing up new Medicaid patients. County officials say it will cost the state nothing and actually saves the county money in the long run. Lawmakers are also likely to consider a $1 a pack tax hike on cigarettes and possibly other tobacco products. They have less than a week remaining until they're scheduled to adjourn for the summer. I'm Brian Mackey.
Television is chock full of reruns, from the recent, like CSI, to the vintage, like I Love Lucy. It's been that way for years, and is especially so on cable. As NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports, one result is that syndication deals have become a much bigger part of the television business.
Reruns are no longer seen as filler. Case in point, repeats of The Big Bang Theory on cable channel TBS.
Yeah, I don't like my own sweat touching my skin. How do you think I feel about theirs?
Repeats of The Big Bang Theory made TBS one of the highest-rated cable networks with 18 to 49-year-olds during prime time. On some nights, they'll air up to 6 episodes of Big Bang Theory back-to-back.
Cathedra mea, reguli meae. That's Latin for my chair, my rules.
So The Big Bang Theory was, to us, smart, young, funny, relevant, but also it's a very big-hearted show.
Michael Wright heads up programming for TBS, TNT, and Turner Classic Movies. He won't confirm it, but they reportedly paid over $1 million per episode. He says reruns of a hit show can not only boost ratings, they can serve as great lead-ins for original programs. He says take repeats of Law & Order on TNT.
Law & Order was routinely hitting 2 million in the demo.
Kids today, they do drugs. Sex is like a drink of water. No wonder they get in trouble.
TNT wanted to see if they could keep those viewers for the new show they launched in 2005, The Closer.
We launched The Closer out of that consistent 1.5 to 2 million demo rating. That's a pretty nice tee up.
What do you want?
The same thing you want, Mr. Goldman, to find the people who killed J-Rock.
Final episodes of The Closer air this summer, and then it will surely have another life in reruns. They're everywhere. Repeats of Glee will air on Oxygen. Repeats of Modern Family will air on the USA Network. What has changed is the demand for recycled programs has gone up, and that's been good news for the folks who sell those programs, says Derek Compere, the author of Rerun Nation, How Repeats Invented American Television.
It's a multiplying of the platforms that's lucrative right now.
He says online streaming sites like Netflix and Amazon are hungry for content.
What's happened is there's so many pieces of the pie, so many options for viewers out there, that the way to succeed isn't by aggregating everybody into one piece of the pie, but is trying to get your content into as many pieces of that pie as possible.
That's what CBS is doing. They recently reported that profits were up 80% in the first quarter of this year. And that's in large part because of all of the syndication and streaming deals. The CBS library includes shows like Dexter and Medium. Even shows as old as Frasier are part of these rerun deals.
Canadian goose down pillow, Egyptian cotton sheets, and a nice vicuna throw in case you get a little chilly during the night.
How perfect.
I still say a couple of years in the service would have done you boys a world of good.
In a recent conference call with analysts, CBS president and CEO Leslie Moonves was almost breathless talking about how sales of all their hit shows will contribute to their bottom line for years to come.
There's opportunities galore out there. So there are a lot of players out there circling the building, and we will be making some of those deals, over the next number of months.
Many of these non-advertising revenue sources, said Moonves, did not even exist a few years ago. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
It's 12:49 from the Afternoon Magazine here on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. One last reminder, we still welcome your election news feedback in a live chat going on right now at willconnect.org. We want to know what you'd like to hear, see, and read from Illinois public media between now and Election Day. The chat continues for another 10 minutes. Again, that's at willconnect.org.
The long-term future of public media in central Illinois depends on the generosity of people like you, who can make special gifts through their estate. Consider including WILL in your estate plan. Leave your own legacy and support what you love. Your attorney can help you put your wishes into proper form. For information on the WILL Legacy Circle, call Don DeBeard at 217-333-7300 or online at will.illinois.edu/support.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 25th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Live in the sunshine, swim the sea, drink the wild air. Nothing great was ever achieved without enthusiasm. Ralph Waldo Emerson, born Boston, 1803, came from a family of Unitarian ministers, went off to Harvard Divinity School, was ordained, got married, he was happy, became senior pastor of a Unitarian church in Boston. And 2 years after he got married, his wife Ellen died of tuberculosis at the age of 19. Emerson was devastated, began to have doubts about the church, took a leave of absence, went on vacation in the mountains of New Hampshire, and by the time he returned, he decided to resign. Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "Finish every day and be done with it. You have done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities no doubt crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. You shall begin it serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense." And it's the birthday of the poet Theodore Rethke, born Saginaw, Michigan, 1908, to a family of florists, greenhouses in their backyards. Rethke went off to Harvard, started writing poetry, taught at the University of Washington. He was a big man, 225 pounds, tried to talk like a gangster, manic depressive, drank too much, wore fur coats, drove big cars, and was a memorable teacher. When he wanted his students to write a description of a physical action, he told them to describe what he was about to do, and then he climbed out the window, out onto a narrow ledge, and inched his way around the classroom, making faces at every window. And he made his students memorize poems so they'd have something to call on when they were going through a rough period in life. Here's a poem for today by Theodore Rethke, "In a Dark Time." In a dark time, the eye begins to see. I meet my shadow in the deepening shade. I hear my echo in the echoing wood, a lord of nature weeping to a tree. I live between the heron and the wren, beasts of the hill and serpents of the den. What's madness but nobility of soul at odds with circumstance? The day's on fire. I know the purity of pure despair, my shadow pinned against a sweating wall. That place among the rocks, is it a cave or a winding path? The edge is what I have. A steady storm of correspondences, a night flowing with birds, a ragged moon, and in broad day the midnight come again. A man goes far to find out what he is. Death of the self in a long, tearless